Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Coach Chat. I am Laurie Lawson, and my fantastic co-host is the amazing...
Oh, thanks, Laurie. Bernie Siegel here in the Catskill Mountains.
Yes, and Bernie got snow this morning, so for those of us looking at just fun, that was pretty interesting. Let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. We here at Coach Chat believe if you change your perspective, you can change your life. We develop Coach Chat for coaches or those interested in one of the most quickest growing professions in the world today. We hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who share their expertise and give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and your business. And today, our guest is Tom Tom Giovanni. Hello. Thank you. I'm sorry. Give me a little time. I'll get it right.
Lori, you're almost there. Think of it as a very musical name. Di Giovanni.
I like it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let me tell you a little bit about Tom Di Giovanni. He's the president of Energy Coaching Associates. Oh, boy, I'm having a great time with language today. I think I've been alone too long here in New York City. Tom believes that the foundation of successful leadership is based on heightened self-awareness about motives, values, and personality traits, which is effective with leaders in all levels who want to make a difference in their organizations. Tom has been a coach, a trainer, and a speaker in corporate, federal and local government, and not-for-profit organizations in the United States and abroad. Specific areas of expertise are leadership development, self and others, career coaching. He facilitates sessions on team and organizational development. Tom's a member of the Forbes Coaches Council and is a featured expert in a coaching course at Cornell University. He's a professional certified coach, also known as a PCC with the International Coach Federation, and a board certified coach with the Center for Credentialing and Education. And he's got a whole bunch of other credentials, but we only have half an hour, so I'm going to stop here and let's find out more about Tom and his stuff. Go, Bernie, his stuff.
All right. And also for people to know, mentioned we're all three of us are trained from IPEC. Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching, all three of us. So we have similar backgrounds in terms of our training. Welcome, Tom, to the call. A lot of our listeners like to know a little bit about the journey. How did our guests come to be doing what they're doing? And so we'd love to hear a little bit, not the whole half hour, because one person did that once, I think. just a couple of minutes on your journey and how you got to be a coach and doing what you're doing.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's a real pleasure to be here and to be with you both and our audience. So I came at coaching through two different directions. One direction was from my day job, so to speak. For many, many, many years, I was involved in, as a manager, executive in educational media for places like Time Life Books and National Geographic, PBS, other places. And one of the things that I loved about my work was that I got to help people on my team develop and be the best that they could be. And that was very rewarding and satisfying for me. The other way that I kind of came at this was from my volunteer work. And I got very active as a, we didn't use the term coach, but that's what it was, during the height of the AIDS crisis in the early 90s. And I volunteered to help people who were diagnosed with HIV and who were dying of AIDS, in fact, and to be with them as a partner on their journey and to help them in any way that I could. That experience was really very impactful for me. And so when I came to a decision point about 11 years ago about what I wanted to do with my career, I stumbled upon a coach, somebody who was a coach, and that was an instant aha moment that this would be the perfect intersection for me.
Hmm. Wow, and I'm interested. I lucked upon IPAC. I don't know if Bernie did any research. What made you, what was so appealing about the, when we say IPAC, we're talking about the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching, our training school. What particularly appealed to you about that?
Well, one of the most impactful teachers, and I use that term very broadly. He was never a direct teacher in the classroom, but I read a lot of Joseph Campbell's work. And one of his quotes that I love is, "Follow your bliss, and the universe will open doors for you where there were only walls." And that to me, from an energetic point of view, really resonated with me. And when I went to look for coaching schools, the one that had a real focus on energy and using your energy to your best advantage was IPAC. And that's how I gravitated toward IPAC. I also like the fact that they had an emphasis on the business part of coaching, and that's actually how I got to meet Bernie, who became my mentor coach as I was a young coach. And so that's how I got to IPAC, and it was a very transformative experience for me, and I use a lot of what they taught me in my practice as a coach in all kinds of ways.
And you mentioned energy leadership, and many people probably don't know what that is, and it's kind of a broad question, but, you know, what is energy leadership, and, you know, how does it, you know, benefit, you know, either a person or an organization?
That's a great question. So, see, let me try and I'll pare it down to be as concise as I can.
Sure.
So we all have the option of intentionally choosing our thoughts about what we want to do, right? We can believe that people who succeed, you know, people like Oprah Winfrey, for example, were born with a certain talent and skills to be successful, or, you know, we can believe that at some point that those people became successful through a process of thinking and acting in a certain kind of way. And so energy leadership helps people to connect with, to create a vision for themselves or their organization, and to take action on it to build strength and to build kind of an inevitability thinking that that what they are doing is going to come to a conclusion through a series of steps and hard work and application of their focus and energy.
Okay, and believe it or not, Bernie and I are such old timers that there was not energy leadership index from when we were taking it. That was a whole new thing that.
Wow.
Just kidding. I know. How old are we?
Wow. Well, I'm probably older than you both, but I hear what you meant.
Well, let me ask you. When I introduced you, you said something that. Or your bio says something that the foundation of successful leadership is based on heightened self-awareness about motives, values, and personality traits.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? And if you had to prioritize, or is it a delightful blend of all three? Yeah, can you just tell us what that means?
Yeah, So it is kind of a blend of all three. I like to hang my hat a lot, on all of them. But on the middle one particularly, I think has a lot of power to it, values. And I don't know if you are familiar at all with the work of John DeMartini. He is a thought leader on values. And values and connecting to your core values, what means, what has meaning for you, what has purpose for you, is like jet fuel towards your satisfaction, towards your reaching your goals. And if you can connect to your values, it provides a tremendous amount of energy to get you to where you want to go. And I work with a lot of people who are very successful, and some people who want to be even more optimal. And asking them to reconnect to their values, because our values actually change over time. What we valued as a 18-year-old is different from what we valued when we were 35, and what we valued when we were 35 is different from what we value when we're 62. So getting in touch with our values has quite a lot of resonance and power toward helping us be our best selves and to realize the success that we want in whatever way we define success.
You know, it's interesting, Tom. I was just speaking this morning with a client that I haven't spoken to in a year and a half, and I've coached him through three different organizations. He was totally miserable in the first two, and he reminded me, which I didn't remember. He said, you know, Bernie, I always remember you talked about values, just what you're saying, Tom. Mm-hmm. He said, I ended up mm-hmm. in an organization. He's at KPMG now. We shared the same values, and I'll never forget that. I'm really happy, and I learned a lesson. So, yeah, I think that just happened this morning when he mentioned exactly what you were talking about. So that was just a coincidence.
Yeah, well, it's a great question that we all can ask ourselves every morning when we get up, which is, what can I offer the world? You know, what is my value to the world? And the answer to that question is going to be different for everybody, which is mm-hmm. which is what makes it all so interesting and so makes the world so diverse and everybody being able to contribute what they're best at to the world.
Mm-hmm. You know, I could definitely see how that can help you on an individual level. Could you give me an example of how, if I'm aware of my values, how am I going to be a better leader?
If let me make sure I have the question right. If I'm aware mm-hmm. of my values, how am I going to be a better leader?
Right.
Is
if I'm
correct?
Aware of my personal values, how is that going to help me go out and be a better leader for my corporation or whatever?
Sure. Well, let's just say that one of your values is about being fair, being fair and being honest. For example. So you can take that value and apply it to what in this day, in this week, how am I going to exercise my values of being fair and honest in terms of looking at my team and deciding how I am going to meet my payroll? And how am I going to reach those decisions about furloughs, layoffs, who I keep, and how am I going to go about that that is going to honor my values, that I will feel the most calibrated with? It may be the hardest decision ever, but if I can calibrate to my highest values, then at least I will feel like I've done the best I can, and I will do right by the people I am serving.
Beautiful current example. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that was terrific. So, Tom, getting to the ground level now, I'll call it. We're talking generalities. What's going on out there? What are you finding are the top challenges and issues and organizations that you're working with today?
Well, I work with a very diverse range of organizations, some government, some nonprofits, some corporate, and small companies, large organizations. Mm-hmm. And everyone is trying to figure out how they can do their best with all of the chaos and uncertainty and adversity that's going on. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of anxiety about this period of time. And I think that's what's top of mind for just about everyone I'm talking with today.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any tips and tricks to help us get through? We'll take them.
Yeah. Well, as with any kind of stressful crisis kind of situation, I ask people to think about various ways to reframe what's going on for them. And there are various ways to reframe it. So somebody can be in a stressful situation and they can reframe it by a learning mindset. What can I learn from this challenge, right? It's a way to reframe it, take it away from that anxiety level. Another way to reframe it is by looking at your values, which I talked about, and figuring out how your values are going to serve you well in this period of time. Another way to do it might be looking at it as kind of a game. And I don't mean to trivialize it, but, frustration is often part of playing a game. And rather than fretting about losing, right, in a game we often can acknowledge that while we might be losing right now, while we might be having a hard time right now, there's a real possibility I could win big tomorrow. Gratitude is another wonderful way to reframe by just recognizing and feeling some genuine satisfaction from some things that we often overlook that are real blessings for us. I ask people sometimes to think about the randomness of life. Life can be really random. I mean, who would have thought a few months ago that we would be where we are today, right? Very random, right? So we can do our best to try and interpret where we're at and what's going on and how to rise from it, rather than trying to control what we can't control. And the last thing I ask people to consider in reframing is seeing themselves as a hero. Just put a lens over your vision of yourself in this situation and see yourself as a hero. Everybody loves a hero because the hero has to overcome all these obstacles and they come out on top. And so sometimes if we can reframe the situation and look at us as a hero going through the obstacles, it can really help us feel a bit more like we're on a real path, a hero's journey right now. So that's kind of some of the things I work with my clients during times like this where there's so much anxiety and uncertainty.
Yeah, it seems like you were saying a few months ago, it seems like it's hourly that things change. And when I speak to clients a week and a half later, it's like a whole new ballgame. Sometimes I actually, to some clients, I'll say, make believe this is a game. And just what you said, control what you can control. Don't get anxious over what you can, but it's a game. And, how could you win in this game? And people will look back a year from now and say, hopefully they've learned a lot that could help them going forward. I was also thinking about, I know you work with lots of different personality assessments, and I'm just curious to know, which ones do you use and how do you use them?
Well, I use a whole slew of them. And sometimes the ones I use are dictated by the client. So, for example, I worked with a local city government that particularly wanted their top-level cabinet people to take the emotional intelligence assessment and be coached around that. So sometimes it depends on the client, and then sometimes it depends on the assessment that I think might open the door for a different way of thinking or some new insights for people. So, for example, sometimes people are promoted to executive roles, and right where the subject matter expertise isn't really what's going to make them successful, but it in a role like an executive role, it's really all about being persuasive and influential. And some people never thought about, like, how could I be persuasive and more influential? And how do I know how good I am at that now, right? So believe it or not, there's an assessment about that, the influence style indicator. And so that assessment and others like it, act as a way to open up a conversation. It acts as a way to use some vocabulary that people aren't used to using in terms of providing some insights about themselves and who they want to be. And that's how I use assessments as an important part of our coaching experience.
Interesting. Normally I would ask, it's like, what is the biggest challenge out there? I think we all know what the biggest challenge is out there right now, just mere survival. But in your opinion and based on your vast experience, what kind of leader is needed in today's climate?
I would say a leader that has a combination of both perseverance and flexibility. And even though they may sound like opposites, they really work hand in hand together. Because as Bernie just stated, everything is changing. Just at lightning speed. What was the main focus last week is history. And this week it's really different. So that flexibility has got to come in handy. And the persistence, the ability to keep your focus no matter what's kind of thrown on you is a complement to that skill of flexibility. So I think if people can keep their muscles worked on both of those leaders, they will have a great chance of succeeding through this storm.
Some of the things that leaders are doing today are working with their staff from home and using Zoom or whatever other software to have conference calls. Are you finding that the case, and how are your clients handling that? Because that's like brand new experience for most.
Yes. Well, it is an experience for most. And for the companies that largely have a remote organization, it's not been an issue at all. But it has been more so for more traditional organizations. Higher education in general is one that is very challenged right now about virtual education and what that means. And they've been called largely unprepared in terms of the technology, in terms of the techniques, in terms of a level of acceptance from both students and parents. That has gotten a little better since all of this started a month ago, but it's got a long way to go. So the bright side is if they can embrace it and take away some learnings from this challenge, virtual education, virtual learning will take a big step forward, I think, as a result of the current situation.
At least, if nothing else, we're all going to learn Zoom. So that'll be the number one thing from now on. And along those lines, it's like, what do you feel, how does virtual leadership work? What's an asset of virtual leadership? Or are
there
any?
I think a leader who is adept at working well with their teams remotely has a real bank of trust that is built up previous to this, and hopefully will get even more deeper in terms of trust, because you can't go into a virtual working arrangement without a level of trust, for sure, on both parts. And as we know, trust is the real foundation of effective teams. So I think that's where it begins.
Wow, that's interesting.
Such a good point, because I was, again, just talking to a client the other day about if you get your people to trust you, that's really key to motivating them and inspiring them. And so he's actually working on that. Can you think of one or two things on top of your head? I know we're getting near the half hour, that a leader could do to build trust with some of their people?
So it varies within every situation, of course.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they have to trust that their people are – they want to do their best jobs possible remotely. Some people have a bias against working remotely because they think that people won't work hard or that people are going to slough off. And actually, a lot of studies of what I read is just the opposite, that remote workers work really hard and want to do a really great job for many different reasons. So I think being able to be affirming about, yeah, you know, I know you're going to do a good job. I know you're going to be productive. Another thing is to make sure that you're really including everybody on your team on the calls or conferences, from the lowest person on the ladder to people who don't speak up. Just being very conscious about where each individual is, what's going on in their lives, you know, and connecting with them, not only in the group calls, but on some one-on-one calls. I think that can go a long way to building trust.
Great.
All right. Well, we went a little over, but let's hope that everybody's still listening. I want to thank you, Tom DiGiovanni. Yay. For being our guest and being so fantastic during this crazy time. Some of your advice was really on target. Bernie, as always, thank you for being a fantastic co-host. Everybody stay safe, and we will see you next month. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.